22-3475, Sherry Druck versus NetJets Aviation Incorporated. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Knoll for appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'm requesting 4 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right.
My name is Lara Knoll, and I represent Sherry Druck, who is here with me today in the galley, and her lawsuit against NetJets, her appeal. Unable to fit in and operate the Phenom. That's actually what we're going to be talking about today. Now, NetJets is saying that the men, that pilots that were moved to another airplane, they're tall, and that's why they're not comparable, because Sherry's short. But it is the same. It is comparable because Sherry was unable to safely fit in and operate the Phenom because she was short. The end result's the same. If you can't control the aircraft because of your stature.
You know, there was some indication that the taller men could, in fact, safely fly the plane, but they were being transferred because of reasons of comfort. And I don't know if that is a distinction from your client, who purportedly could not safely fly the plane. What I'm interested in is, who is the proper comparable for your client? If she was too short, or I shouldn't use the word short, but diminished in stature to safely fly, would the comparable male be a short male rather than a tall male? What really would be the appropriate comparable to use?
The appropriate comparable is somebody who's unable to fit in and operate the Phenom. That's what NetJets. That's the reason they move. That's the standard they set. So at the end of the day, and the case law talks about it, it's the end result is the same, that neither one can control the plane. And it wasn't Sherry that said, by the way, I can't control the plane, I need this, or I need it for comfort. It was NetJets, their flight safety instructor, for all intents and purposes, the flight safety instructor was NetJets, because they were on the phone with them. They were telling them what to do. So
your client also says she couldn't safely fly it because, as I understand, she declined further training and so on, and further evaluation that allegedly was offered, because she also was of the opinion that she couldn't fly that plane.
Well, that's a rabbit hole that I hope that Your Honors do not allow NetJets to drag us down, because first I'll talk about what Sherry said was when she realized, when Mr. Messenger said, when Mr. Lambert said she can't fly this plane because she can't attain sufficient control authority because of her short stature. She should have been reassigned. But what they did, they said, why the hell are we just finding out about this now? That's what they heard. And then they.
Let me ask you this. The record wasn't developed to, maybe this is not an issue in the case of this appeal, to show that there were available spots on planes that she could fly, that she might be eligible for. I mean, I guess that gets into whether there would have been an unreasonable burden on the employer, but the record doesn't show whether there were planes available that she could fit in on or not. What are we to make of that?
Miss Sherry was type rated in at least two other aircraft in their fleet. Second, in the deposition testimony, Mr. Lambert and I believe Mr. Eastman testified that there were additional trainings that were coming up. Now, she might have had to wait for a little bit of time to get into a different aircraft, but that's better than tanking her career. She could have moved into a different aircraft. Or, you know, as the point is, as soon as they realized, at the point that they realized that this was a safety issue, that she could not fit in and operate the Phenom, then she should have been moved. Their fit test failed in this situation. Okay, it failed. But give her the same opportunity that you gave the men.
How do the other complaints from NetJets fit within this argument? The I think 12 threes in the testing, isn't that correct? Or is that an independent reason?
Are you asking me if that's NetJets' independent reason?
Yes.
Well, see, I'm if you read the record, Your Honor, it's not really clear. Because they say they have reasonable, they have an honest belief that they can look at and depend on their flight records, and they're depending on that, and that's why they push her into the check ride. But then they're saying that's the reason that part of the reason they terminated her, because she wasn't sufficient. So I'm not clear. I don't see how this can be clear about whether or not. That's an issue. But to answer your question, what happened with Ms. Drupp's initial training was she was with Mr. Felton. No offense against Mr. Felton. He's a good guy, but Mr. Felton didn't like that flight instructor. They fought for 3 days, and during those 3 days, she got scores that were not great. And in the documentation, in the flight records, it says Mr. Lambert testified, well, because of he didn't say arguments, but went in deposition clarified, because of issues between her partner and the flight instructor that put her behind in training. Now, the other piece of this is not a one-dimensional process. There are variables, rightfully so. Sherry has to, all pilots need to learn how to fly at different altitudes because all planes react differently in different altitudes. And in her affidavit, page 9 of our brief, we explain all of that. But that accounts for why she was able to pass some of these sims, because it did not require her to push the rudder to the floor. That's why when she was having problems on some of these, and not all of them, but on some of these, she didn't understand what was going on. She thought, okay, I've been flying for almost 12 years. What is going on here? I'm type rated. I've flown bigger planes than this.
Let me ask a question in a slightly different way.
Sure.
She was hired to fly the Phenom. There's no question about that, right?
Sure.
So let's assume that everything you've been saying is correct. You've established a prima facie case. Do you concede that that NetJets has offered a legitimate non-discriminatory reason why they fired her?
No, I don't concede that, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
We're not at pretext yet. They simply have to say why they fired her in a way that makes sense. They say they fired her because she couldn't pass the test that you have to pass to fly the plane. There's no dispute about that, right?
Yeah.
So then we look beyond that. It's then your burden to show that that reason was a pretext. And in this case, you claim it's a pretext for sex, right?
Yes.
They fired her because she was a woman.
Yes.
So the problem that I'm having in looking at this, even assuming everything you've been saying up to now is correct, NetJets knows that she failed the test. They know that she didn't do well on the training up to that point. They know she refused any additional training. And at that point, they say, okay, you're done. Now, is everything I've said so far correct?
That's what they said.
So where is the evidence that it was because of sex? And let me just suggest to you that you can't say, well, they treated the males differently for purposes of your prima facie case. There's got to be something more. So what's the something more here?
The male pilots were also hired for the Phenom, interrogatory number 12. or 10 to 12. They were specifically hired for the phenom as well. When NetJets discovered that the men were not...
I got that. That's how you establish your prima facie case.
Right. At the time that NetJets discovered themselves, not Sherry, that she was too short to fly the phenom is when they should have looked to reassign her.
So essentially you're saying it doesn't make any difference that none of them failed the test.
Correct.
That doesn't matter.
They pushed her into it.
It doesn't matter that any of them didn't score well on the test that they did pass. That doesn't matter. Doesn't matter that they refused any additional training that, for all we know, may or may not have allowed her to safely fly the plane. You want us to just disregard all of that in terms of what essentially is the honest belief rule.
Yes. Yeah, because they pushed her into that. She did it anyway, and she didn't refuse it, as she testified in her deposition.
They pushed her into what?
They said make it work. When Mr. Lambert and Mr. Messenger got on the phone with Mr. Queen and said, she's too short to do this, she's too short to maintain control, he said, make it work. And they pushed her into all the other things. That's the rabbit hole. And if that's all that employers need to do is to continue on with another rabbit hole, then we're going to have a really hard time moving forward with comparables in these matters. My time is up.
All right, you have your rebuttal time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Elizabeth Moyo. I'm an attorney for Appellee NetJets Aviation, Inc. I'm here with my co-counsel, Jordan Day, Porter Wright, and my client, Jennifer Beal of NetJets. This court should affirm the trial court's summary judgment decision because appellant was not discriminated against based on her sex. There is no direct or even circumstantial evidence, to your point, Judge McKeague, of sex discrimination, or that NetJets was motivated to terminate Ms. Drura because she is a woman.
Well, it's a little bit of an overstatement. I mean, the whole question becomes, is it enough that they transferred the men before they even tested them and they didn't transfer her?
The experience of NetJets was that based on their height, these male pilots, should be moved after their indoc training and before they start training on the phenom, because experience had shown that their height was would not make them fit comfortably in the plane. And Judge Clay, you asked about who is an adequate comparable. The physical characteristic and the conduct are both important here, if you think about it, just common sense tells you that a tall person, male or female, who can't fit comfortably in the plane, their ability to fly that plane, to complete the 25 maneuvers, is going to be different than a short person, male or female, who there are some things that they can do to adjust, like the seat cushion, like the thicker-soled shoes.
Weren't those against NetJets policy?
No, that's not in the record. There are a certain type of shoes that you can purchase at the pilot store. I believe Mr. Queen identified the pilot store in Cincinnati where you can get these seat cushions, you can get shoes. Mr. Queen also identified different maneuvers that he was aware of that pilots of shorter stature had done to get sufficient rudder control. So so what we're talking here about is the differences between taller pilots and shorter pilots. Nothing about the differences between men and women.
That's, I guess my struggle with that answer is, my understanding is that you have a fit test to screen pilots who are too tall, correct?
To see how they appropriately fit in the plane.
Mm-hmm. But not one that includes testing individuals who are too short.
Well, to my knowledge, I don't think the fit test is just to measure tallness or shortness. I think it has to do with whether they're fit for the particular plane based on our experience. So,
well, then what we've got here are two men who were too tall and automatically moved from the plane that they had been hired for and given a different plane. And we have someone else who is too short, a woman, and she's not given availed of the same opportunity to be transferred because she doesn't fit appropriately to fly in that cockpit.
Well, that's her belief, that she did not.
Well, my problem, counsel, is it's what happened. The two men were transferred, the woman was not. My understanding from the record is that there is actually a measurement taken of leg length to determine if these tall pilots are unable to fly. But I don't see any evidence in the record that there is a measurement of leg length here. I know the argument is, well, she's the same height as other women who can actually fly, but that's not the comparator. The problem is not the height. The problem is the length of legs, which has been conceded by your client because that's how you measure the men. But you didn't measure the woman. Why? I don't understand why that's not a comparable comparator here.
Well, Your Honor, the plaintiff is the one who put the height stature into question. And so what we identified were these similar women who are part of our Phenom fleet who are the same height.
Well, she put in, the people who tested her said she's not of sufficient stature to reach the pedals on the floor, which is a leg length question. And my problem is, you measured the leg length of the men, and you did not measure the leg length of the woman whose legs were too short to appropriately reach and be able to compress the rudder all the way down. Now, you're going to have to help me again because that seems to me an obvious event of comparison that would make these men the obvious comparators.
Your Honor, I'm not sure where you're getting the evidence that we did not measure her leg length. There's no evidence in the record that the measurements for the fit test for men was somehow different than the measurements taken for women.
Well, that's a good answer. But
I can't find anything in the record that you measure leg length. Is that in the record someplace?
The fit test is not just a I don't think it's completely in the record, Your Honor. It's not there are different measurements of the body that are taken. They're taken of all male and female pilots. There's no different fit test for a female pilot than a male pilot. That's not in the record anywhere, and that's certainly not the case.
Well, so then help me. If you're measuring the female and the male's legs are too long to fit comfortably and the female's legs are too short to reach the rudder, and you transferred the male's and refused the opportunity to the female, why don't you have an example of sex discrimination?
Well, because there's no evidence in the record that these three males, there's no evidence of their leg length, and there's no evidence.
I'm struggling with that, counsel.
The other,
because that did not come to me out of the blue. I read in the record that there are leg measurements made to determine that these men did not fit in the cockpit. Maybe they didn't tell me the length of the guy's legs, but that doesn't come out of nowhere. That is in the record.
Well, and Your Honor, what happened was that the appellant did not elicit this testimony in discovery to identify these. What you're saying is a sufficient comparison. That was not identified by the appellant. She wants to paint this broad brush and say it's just stature. We are not I don't have the exact leg lengths of the male pilots, and I don't have the exact leg lengths of the female pilots.
And yet, based on some measurement, the male pilots were allowed to opt into another aircraft, and the female was not. And that's what we have in this record.
But it doesn't show, the appellant hasn't showed how those differences in leg lengths, if they even existed, how did those differences in their leg lengths impact their performance? Which maneuvers, for example?
Well, the very maneuver at issue here.
No,
the maneuver that the test that was made when she was being trained, she was given notice in advance of when this change was going to occur. And the record indicates that she would then slide down in her seat and had time to do it so that she could push the rudders all the way to the floor. And if she did that, she could pass some of that particular test. Not all it, but enough to be able to be given a check flight. So the record shows us what the issue is.
The training record shows, Your Honor, that she was able to proficiently pass all of the maneuvers. There's not some maneuvers that she did not pass during her simulator training.
She passed some, there's no question of that.
No,
when the test was that she had someone beside her who said, we're about to have this maneuver, and she had time to slide down. But in the test ride, nobody gives you a warning. So in the test ride, she did not have a warning. Isn't that what the record shows?
Isn't that sort of the point of a test and the training, right? The pilot in the Ocheong case, he complained that they didn't give him the warning during the test. And he said that meant the test was improperly administered. But that's the difference between training and test, right? And Mr. Messenger, who was training, he said, the flight safety instructor, he testified in his deposition, he said, look, yes, I gave her a warning in that first additional supplemental training that she got. I gave her a warning. But then she did it again. She did it again in her second supplemental training, her ninth simulator training session, and she did it. And we also know...
So how does this answer our questions about comparators?
About comparators?
Yes,
well,
about comparators.
I think that what you're getting at, Judge, is that the physical characteristics is relevant to the comparator analysis, as is conduct. I mean, that's what this court has said in the past, that you have to establish their comparable and all relevant aspects. That's the plaintiff's burden. And the plaintiff has not met her burden because she is describing the physical characteristics with a broad brush. She hasn't provided you with the evidence of how Ms. Drarup's, the length of her legs was comparable to the length of the male pilot's legs. And she hasn't. And, we can look at the training records.
I guess I'm struggling with what it takes to make a prima facie case. And it is not the most difficult part of this litigation. So the question before us is whether she has made a prima facie case of discrimination. And then we move through your response, which was adequate. Here's what happened. Here's why we say we did it. And then the question becomes pretext. And the question is this a question that has been resolved on the record here, or is this a question for a jury? Is it that, and I'm not sure I understand why, when the evidence has two males who were allowed because of their leg length to transfer to another plane prior to training, and the female was not, that's not enough to get her to a jury. Why is that not?
Well, the Sixth Circuit, this court has actually said repeatedly that that's not enough. In the Chen case, and also in the Nathan versus Ohio State University case, and in the they said, you know, it's not enough. I'll use the Mitchell case versus the University of Toledo. In that case, you know, it was the Toledo Hospital. Sorry, not University of Toledo, Toledo Hospital. In that case, the Sixth Circuit found that it wasn't enough to just have had some sort of discriminatory comments made about the employee in the background, right? That there had to be some evidence that the that tied that to the reasons why, to show pretext, right? To overcome these legitimate business reasons, right? And so in the Chen case also, the female was an Asian American woman who claimed she was terminated improperly based on her race. And she went through and she tried to discredit all of those reasons. She said, look, it wasn't my problem. It was Dow Chemical's poor methods. My methods were better. Their supplemental training wasn't enough. And that she knew better, and that she had shown that there was some other reason for her termination because she had performed. That was her contention. And the Sixth Circuit said, that's not enough. Where's the evidence of pretext? Even if you dispute these facts.
Excuse me for interrupting. You're run out of your time here.
Yeah,
so I have
yeah.
another question. There's a lot of discussion in the briefing about leg length, but is there any evidence in the record as to the leg length of anybody here, either the plaintiff or the supposed comparator males?
No.
So we don't know. You're familiar with this record, obviously, and you're telling us there is no leg length information in the record.
Correct.
So we'll find out from Ms. Kroll in a moment when she stands up. So to put all of this together, even if you assume that the males are sufficient comparators for the prima facie case, is there any evidence of sexual pretext here beyond what was offered up for purposes of the prima facie case?
No, there's not. And there have been cases when there has been more evidence of some sort of discrimination. That Ochion case, that other case involving a pilot with the PSA Airlines, he was an Italian pilot. And he had marshaled this evidence about these comments that were made about his national origin during his experience with the airline. And the court said, you know, you haven't shown those comments, you haven't shown how they're tied to termination. They're not enough to overcome the legitimate business reasons for terminating this employee. NetJets had these legitimate business reasons: the failed check ride, the refusal to continue the check ride, the refusal of any additional training. That's what happened in Chen too. She said, I don't need any more training. I got this. Or just move me to a different plane. Just let me do it my way. You know, that doesn't establish pretext.
I see you're out of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, your rebuttal.
Your Honor, Sherry's just short. She's not stupid. She's been flying for 12 years. She knows what it takes. She knows about safety. She teaches aviation safety now.
All right, Ms. Noll. A lot of us in this room are short.
Okay. Right.
But that doesn't show whether our legs are long or they're short.
Right.
Is the shortness from our legs or is it from our torso? So go back to where we were a minute ago. To the best of your knowledge, because it seems to me this is your burden, is there any evidence in the record with respect to leg length of either your client or the males that were transferred to other planes?
Actual physical measurement, no. But if you, on page ID 779, Mr. Messenger's handwritten flight note said, Sherry's stature precludes attaining sufficient control authority. At that point, why do we need them to say that her legs measure 20 inches or whatever? Because he's saying, as he's seeing it, she can't do it. And this is, Mr. Messenger is a perfect example of why this case should not be decided on summary judgment, because when he said all these things, and Mr. Felton on page ID 730 backs up what Sherry says, Mr. Messenger said, Sherry, you're just too short. You're just too short to do this.
Although that wasn't the only reason given for her termination.
Right.
So since there were several reasons, how do we weigh that?
Well, let's talk about Mr. Felton having a three-day argument with the flight instructor. No problem there, but Sherry didn't say thank you or shake someone's hand when she was dog sick during in-doc training, and she didn't even find out about it until we got into discovery that was an issue. And if you see all the documentation, the pieces of documentation they have, that is, that was the date before they terminated her. And when they talk about the females, they said, well, that was the last paragraph of the second affidavit of Mr. Easton in his reply brief. They're talking, they've moved from unable to safely fit and operate in the Phenom to, well, comfort. And as Judge Clay, you understand, when there's changing reasons for why a person was terminated or why a person doesn't fit, and that's how we're casting doubt in this case, there is a likelihood that this could be discrimination. What other reason do you have to lie or to provide different reasons than to cover discrimination, I believe is what you said.
What about the booster seat and the platform shoes? Is that or is that not against NetJets policies?
In their handbook, it says no platform shoes and also females cannot wear heels. So, I mean...
But they made an exception for her, it would seem, since they actually advised her to get the shoes and the pillows and all that sort of thing.
Well, that's to make it happen. See, this is the problem. For the men, they said, oh, wait, you're you're not comfortable? Or, oh, wait, you're too tall. Okay, here, take another plane. For Sherry, they pushed her into a check ride that has kept her from being a pilot since then. She cannot do full-time work because she failed that. They knew she was going to fail.
We've been talking a lot about how to prove pretext. And in reading your brief, I can't figure out which of the three means of proving pretext you're relying upon here.
I'm sorry. Which of the three?
All of them. Three ways to show pretext, to show that the legitimate non-discriminatory reasons were not the real reasons why the adverse employment action was taken. One is they're not true. I've forgotten what the other two are. But which of the three are you relying upon?
Well, none of them are true. And if what they did...
So you're relying on all three?
Yes, none of them. They took pieces.
We have a red light, so if your answer is you're relying on all three, then that's fine. That's all I'm asking you.
One final question. If you had to, you don't have to give a long discourse, but if you had to identify the material factual disputes that should have precluded summary judgment, what would you say they are?
Well, the biggest one is Mr. Messenger. He changed his story. The second is how this went down. And how the whole thing went down. And third, pushing her in, the reasons they pushed her into all the additional stuff and used it against her as means for termination when they knew what was going to come out by their own records, by their own flight instructor.
All right. Thank you very much. Case shall be submitted. Thank you for your arguments. When the table is clear there, the next case may be called.